Hey, it's our first check-in of 2021 with the Car Doctor, John Paul from AAA Northeast. Happy New Year, John.
Happy New Year, Joe. Glad to be back.
Yeah, nice to have you. First time this year, but hopefully not the last, of course.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that.
Always good to talk to you. And welcome to new month, actually, too. It came in like a lion.
It did, and that was actually the headline of our gas price release, was in like a lion, maybe out like a lamb. We don't know yet. So, gas prices certainly on everybody's mind these days.
Yeah, I mean, that's the most obvious thing, I guess, to talk about first is the price of gas going up. I was down the Cape this past weekend. Actually, it's close to $3 a gallon already down there. So, I mean, is that where we're headed, do you think?
I don't know that we're headed there. I mean, certainly there was an issue with, all of the storms in Texas. And Texas is sort of the breadbasket of, where gasoline and oil is produced. We get a fair amount of oil on the East Coast from the North Sea, from European oil, but still an awful lot of it comes from the Gulf and from Texas. And with the refineries offline in Texas, it took about 1 million barrels a day out of production. And now the refineries are starting to get back in line. And what typically happens is gas prices go up maybe a little too high and a little too fast. So there's generally a spike, and the prices are, the profit, especially on the retail side, is made as the prices start to come back down. So what happens is, as those prices come down, the retailers hold the price up a little bit higher to try to make a little bit more profit. On a normal day, maybe the profit's in that, 5, 10, 15 cents per gallon time. But when the prices spike really quickly, they're having to make up for what's in their tank at that point and having to replace that with more expensive products. So they have to kind of anticipate the prices are going to go up when they buy it. And in some cases, when we saw really volatile prices a couple years ago, a lot of the retail stations were not making any money for, months on end, and they were just kind of living off their profits from when they were making money. So it's a little bit of a confusing thing, but at the end of the day, gasoline prices are based on supply and demand. And if the demand is strong and the supply gets tight, prices tend to go up. If the demand slows down, like it has, I mean, demand has slowed down somewhat since COVID. But if you've been out on the road, and your trip to the Cape probably proved out that the roads are starting to get a little bit more crowded, more people are traveling. Still, there's an awful lot of people working at home, just like I am. But still, people are hitting the road a little bit more. And now it's that balancing act of supply and demand. Right now in Massachusetts, we're seeing an average of $2.65 a gallon. It's higher, obviously, on the Cape. It's higher in Boston. And we'll probably see some continued rise in price over the next week or so. The problem is we start to get into the springtime changeover of gasoline. In the beginning of February, in warmer states, they've already switched over from what's called winter gas to summer gas. Winter gas allows the car to start easier in colder temperatures. Summer gas doesn't evaporate as quickly. So there's extra cost into producing both of those types of gasoline. We saw that pretty quick dip in gas prices as they were selling off some of the winter gasoline across the country. But as we go into summer, gas prices could start to go up. So it wouldn't be unusual, and it's pretty historically accurate, that what we see is we see gas prices start to go up in April. They start to climb as we go into May. And then usually as we hit summer driving season, they plateau, and that can be, Memorial Day through 4th of July, even through right to August. So, certainly could we see another 10 or 15 cent increase? Probably in the short term we could, and then it may settle back down a little bit. So, kind of get used to, $2.75 a gallon maybe for a little while.
I know a lot has been made about the current administration's shutdown of the Keystone Oil Pipeline and the importance of green energy and stressing the switch over to that. Do you think that is playing a role at all?
I don't think so. I mean, all of these are alternatives, and car manufacturers, especially cars, you know, even though everyone says, you know, Volvo says all their cars will be electric by 2030, and Jaguar says all their cars will be electric by, you know, 2030, and GM is going to have all electric cars. In fact, their logo even looks like a big plug. You know, that it's all based on availability of materials too. Green energy sounds like a great idea. And, you know, I wish I could put a windmill and solar panels on my house and, you know, reduce my electric costs. But that's, you know, that is the future. I mean, I'm sure we're going to see more and more of that. And whenever that happens, the good thing is that we see a reduction in conventional energy prices usually. So the gasoline retailers, at least in the short term, I don't think you're going to see them putting electric charging stations replacing their pumps anytime soon. You know, maybe in the next bunch of years, we'll see something like, we'll see a, you know, maybe by 2035, a car with a gasoline engine might be as rare as a car with a clutch pedal these days. Mm. You know, you don't see a lot of standard shift cars, and, you know, that will probably be the case with cars in the future. 2035 still quite a ways off. You know, time will tell. I mean, there's already some concerns. Is there enough material to make batteries? And there are some new companies. I talked to somebody not that long ago who developed a battery that's made out of a graphite type product or graphene product that will take the place of lithium ion, and it's safer and claims to have the same kind of capacity. So, you know, time will tell where things are going to go. But I think all of, you know, what we're seeing is just a change in the way we make electricity and use energy. And, you know, we used to power all of our energy plants with coal and then oil. And most of the plants around New England are natural gas powered. And, you know, it'll be, time will tell where it's all going to go. So, yeah. Yeah. So I wish I was smart enough to know how to invest in it all. I know I'm not. So
another thing that folks are looking forward to, of course, is more travel and how that will, of course, impact energy prices going forward. I haven't heard of talk of any electric planes yet.
Not in a big method. You know, we don't see any electric planes for commercial purposes, but I have seen some YouTube videos of single passenger electric planes, and they look sort of interesting. So you never know where that's going to be. But, you know, right now, even the last time I was on a plane, they made an announcement that it was a carbon neutral flight. So apparently they're saving in other places, and they're able to fly in a fairly controlled and as green a way as possible, considering it's an airplane with big engines on it. So, yeah.
I know Amazon is touting that. I know that they're carbon neutral and have been. And I think Google is trying to become carbon neutral by a certain amount of time as well. So a lot of the big corporations are going that way. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. And, you know, they're talking about green hydrogen. So hydrogen that's produced in a very environmentally friendly way. I think at some point hydrogen cars will be the next big thing, because they are essentially electric cars that use hydrogen to make electricity. That hydrogen can be made from water. Yeah, you know, I think where the future may be going is, you know, electric cars, certainly you look at recharging, and with some of the big recharging stations like Tesla has, you can recharge about 80% capacity in about 20 or 30 minutes. The more battery packs you put inside an electric car to get more range, takes longer time to recharge. Hydrogen, on the other hand, is an electric car. Hydrogen is made from water. It's relatively expensive to make now to kind of strip the hydrogen molecule away from water. But hydrogen is also zero emissions, and it becomes a very economical way to run a vehicle. And it's zero emissions, and refilling your car with hydrogen is something that can be done as quickly as refilling a car with gasoline, or close enough. So, you know, similar to compressed natural gas or propane, you go to fill up your propane tank for your barbecue grill, it takes a couple minutes to do it. Hydrogen could fill up as quickly. there isn't very many hydrogen filling stations these days. There's a couple in the New England area for more experimental purposes, but that's about it. So, you know, time will tell where hydrogen is, but I think hydrogen could be the real future of fuel for vehicles, completely doing away with gasoline. But then still, you know, there's still going to be some need for diesel vehicles at some point. You have to remember that the average age of a car on the road today is 12 years old. And it's getting older because cars are more dependable. And it takes a while for that fleet of cars to turn over. So as the fleet turns over, it's going to be a while before we see all electric cars. And maybe by the time we see all electric cars, we'll see our first flying car.
Okay, there's something to look forward to.
Yeah.
Speaking of flying, has AAA done any kind of research or survey as to how people feel about flying now and where that's going in terms of travel this year?
Well, what we have found is that there's a real pent-up demand for travel. The airport over January 1st holiday was really, really busy. They, you know, TSA had reported really heavy numbers. I just recently came back from Florida. The plane was actually overbooked. So they were actually offering to buy your seat back, which, considering I left 80 degrees to come to 20 degrees, I probably should have taken them up on that. The airports are starting to look busy. I was in the Fort Myers airport, and the little shops are mostly open now. The little stores are mostly open. Logan seems like it's starting to open up a little bit more as well. A little bit more crowds. The place where I normally park is off-site at Logan in Chelsea. It was probably 3/4 full. So more and more people are certainly traveling. What is down, though, is business travel. The traveling that we're seeing tends to be leisure travel or people, you know, visiting family and friends away from home. That's what we're seeing more of. The idea of business conferences and conventions and, you know, those types of things, those really have been, at least right now, replaced with things like this, Zoom and GoToMeeting and all that type of thing.
Yeah. Are they socially distancing on the planes, John, or is it seat to seat now?
See, the plane I was on was chock-a-block full. It couldn't have put one more person on it.
Wow.
I flew in November, and they were leaving every middle seat open. My past two flights I've been on, the planes were absolutely jammed full of people, and I wore two masks and didn't touch anything, you know, and that was about as comfortable as I could feel. So
yeah, masks are still required on planes.
Oh yeah, yeah, masks are still required. In fact, they're very specific about the type of mask that's used. It can't be just a gator style mask. It can't be a bandana. It can't be one of the ones with the vent that you can breathe out. It has to be a regular double layer mask. And the airline that I flew on said, if you don't have the proper mask, we'll sell you one for $3, and that money goes towards healthcare workers.
Okay.
So it was kind of a neat thing. So, you know, I bought a mask just to give the money to healthcare workers, even though I had one. So, yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. They're not, you know, what do you think about showing a proof of vaccine in the future? Do you think that's going to be an issue with travel?
I was talking to somebody who was talking to the president of Aer Lingus, and he said his plan is that he would want to require that for both his employees and his passengers on Aer Lingus. So, you know, whether that actually is, you know, comes to fate or not, who knows, but it's entirely possible that, you know, you may have to, where this is such a contagious type of thing, you may have to, in fact, show some kind of vaccine card that, you know, shows that, you know, you at least tried. So, you know, time will tell.
Yeah. I know this is usually the time of year AAA does their annual travel show. Is that going to happen in some form, do you think?
It already did, actually. We had a virtual travel show.
Okay.
So like a lot of people. And it went over actually pretty well. You know, we're here for our members who are interested in travel. And we're starting to get a lot of people that are interested in booking trips for next year.
Oh.
So they have kind of the money available now, and they want to kind of lock in their prices for next year, hoping that by next year things change enough where they can go and, you know, go on that cruise that they've always wanted to be on or whatever the case is. So yeah, the virtual travel show, we got a lot of questions. And the other part about travel too is, you know, last year in October, Real ID was supposed to be completely finalized. Real ID is that little extra star that comes on your license that says that you can fly domestically, or enhanced ID that says you can crisscross the Canadian border. That was extended to this coming October. And still, if you're somebody who travels pretty regularly and you don't want to travel with a passport, or you don't have a passport, you should consider getting that done before the last minute crunch that will inevitably happen in October. So, and you need Real ID to get in and out of federal buildings, federal parking garages. If you park in the transportation building in Boston, the garage right there, where the transportation building is, that's a federal garage. So you need Real ID to park there. You know, the good news is if you don't have Real ID and you get called for federal court, they'll still let you in though. So if you're a juror in federal court, you don't need Real ID. They'll waive it for that. But yeah, for most people though, you know, getting Real ID, and if it's just part of your normal driver's license renewal, it's just providing a little extra documentation that, you know, where you live and where you were born and that type of thing. It becomes a little more complicated if you've had name changes and things like that, but still follow the directions, and it's pretty easy to do. And even if your license isn't due for another couple of years, you can do it almost like a duplicate license. So you can go in, get your Real ID, you pay $25, I think, and it's as if you lost your license, but then you get Real ID and you're good till your next renewal. So,
oh, okay. And easy. Can AAA offices do Real IDs?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We have all the forms. You can download the forms from the RMV website, so you can kind of be pre-prepared. But if you're not sure, if you have all the right information, you know, is your name on a utility bill, a credit card bill, you know, Social Security cards are kind of a weird thing, and birth certificates. You know, when I got a Social Security card, it was sort of either you had it laminated, because that's what you were told to do, or you were told to, like, you know, hold it so close to you, you'll, you know, don't ever lose it. And I'm pretty sure I had mine laminated and lost it. But I could use my W-2 form. Oh, okay. It had my Social Security number on it. The birth certificates, there are these copies of birth certificates. There has to be an official birth certificate from the town you were born in. Some people have these really cute little Gerber baby birth certificates with the baby's picture on it. They're cute and all, but they're not official. So you have to make sure you use the documents. If you follow the directions to the T and you need sort of three of these and two of these, you're fine.
Okay. Good to know. Has travel insurance changed because of the pandemic, John? Can you buy like pandemic travel insurance in case your trip gets canceled because of it?
I know when the pandemic first hit, there was a lot of exclusions for travel insurance. And we went to our travel insurance folks and said, hey, look, you know, this is a little bit, you know, to say that you can't buy travel insurance now or because you bought it a week later, it doesn't work. You have to support us. I'm sure it has to some extent, but especially if you're planning a, you know, fantastic worldwide tour somewhere and going on vacation for a month. And I'm always amazed at the, I was in one of our offices one day, and there was a fellow who said he had a really good job in his working career, sold his business, and he just enjoys taking his family on vacation and literally spends hundreds of thousands of dollars every year going on vacation. You know, if you're planning those kind of vacations, buy the travel insurance.
Of course, yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. So it's money well spent in that case, just in case something happened. I remember way back right after September 11th, I was going on an anniversary trip to Barbados, and I'm not normally an insurance buyer, and I remember the travel agent saying to me, you know, things are pretty weird right now. You might want to buy the travel insurance. And I felt comfortable for the little extra money it was to buy the travel insurance. So, yeah, look at it. Look at the exclusions. Look and see if it fits you. Travel's such a personal choice that you really need to decide, you know, what travel means to you and how, you know, how important it is as it is. You know, I just got back from a trip, and it was flying to Florida, and my wife's down there and visiting with her for some time before I came back home. And it was important for me to go. You know, other people say, hey, I don't want to take the chance right now. I don't want to risk my health because of, you know, being in that close proximity with people. Again, it's a very personal choice. You need to do what's right for you.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I was reading recently that like day trip travel is going to increase. I think the Cape rentals are already booked out for all of 2021 and into 2022 now.
It wouldn't surprise me. Last year, even though there was some rules in place that said, you know, you had to leave your house kind of empty for a couple of days before you re-rented it again if you were using Airbnb or one of those kind of things. Mm. I know the house across the street from me, every Saturday there was somebody new in there. So, and it was really busy. The county I was in Florida, in Charlotte County, had collected more tourist tax in 2020 than they did in 2019.
Wow.
So, just the idea that more people were going to Florida, it was a little bit of an abnormality for the rest of the state. The rest of the state was a little bit low. But yeah, I would think that more people are going to be traveling. From what I understand, it's still hard to buy an RV because a lot of people last year bought RVs and decided, well, I can go travel the country and still be in a very safe, contained environment because I'm the only one in here.
Right.
So that was a big thing. I remember talking to a woman from Chatham who emailed me and wanted to know where she could rent an RV. And I gave her a bunch of names, and she wanted to take her kids somewhere over July 4th week. And she said, I just can't find one. They're all rented out. So a lot of people were doing that. And I guess the same thing with boats. Boats are in short supply. I know over the summer, it seemed like you couldn't buy a bicycle. Because
that's
people decided, hey, if I'm going to be home, I'm going to go ride a bicycle. I suspect in a couple of years, there'll be a lot of bicycles, RVs, and boats for sale.
That's probably right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of it's manufacturing, too, because, you know, a lot of these companies like, you know, RVs and boat builders and things like that, if COVID hits their assembly plants, it kind of shuts them down temporarily and slows production down. So, you know, people are kind of saying, hey, you know, what's going on? And it, you know, they run the same issues as everybody else does.
Oh yeah, and then, and the supply chain now, of course, is so worldwide that you know, that has an impact as well. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
How about it's springtime almost. What should we be doing with our cars, John, after a brutal winter?
Well, you should be driving them first off. The old miles per gallon, the MPG is like months per gallon right now. You know, people aren't driving their cars as much as they used to. If you're not driving much, look at time versus mileage on how you're taking care of your car, because your car might say change your oil every 5,000 miles or every 6 months. Well, you kind of look and you go, I've only been 3,000 miles. No, change it every 6 months. Okay. Get it into the garage to have it looked at. I drove around a little bit yesterday. It is already early pothole season.
Yes.
So, you know, you hit a couple of big potholes and you can do some tire damage. Batteries suffer the most damage in the summertime from the summer heat, but winter is where it puts the stress on the battery. So the biggest reasons we always rescue people at AAA are flat tires and dead batteries. So if you can have your tires checked out, make sure they're in good condition and make sure your battery's in good shape, that's going to be a big help. Driving your car at least once a week for 30 minutes is the best thing you can do for your car. It removes any rust that builds up on the brakes. It sort of exercises the car a little bit. It charges the battery back up. Just letting the car sit and idle doesn't do anything for the battery. A lot of cars today don't really charge when they're sitting idling. So you go out and you start your car and you're like, oh, I'll just let it run for a while. That'll charge up the battery. It really doesn't.
Okay.
And it doesn't exercise the rest of the fluids in the car. So it's important that the engine oil gets warm, the transmission fluid gets warm, all of those fluids circulate and lubricate all the parts they need to. So a little bit of preventative care. The other thing that I have heard from people over this winter that haven't driven their car that much is critters have made some homes under the hood and mouse houses and other things, and they've chewed some wires and caused some other problems. There are some things you can try. You know, go to your local hardware store, and there's some repellents you can spray or sprinkle around the car that are supposed to smell like a predator, so it keeps the little ones away. People have tried things like dryer sheets, Irish Spring soap, oil of spearmint. All of those things possibly could keep some of the rodents away. People will say mothballs. Yeah, they don't, you know, rodents don't really like mothballs, but I don't either. So I would much rather try oil of spearmint. At least it smells good. So, okay. Yeah. So again, some regular preventative maintenance, the things that you would normally do if you've been driving, you still need to do it. So even though you haven't been driving as much, even gasoline can go bad over time. You know, some people are literally, you know, going months without adding gasoline to their car. You can go to the auto parts store, department store, and get something called gasoline stabilizer. It just keeps the gas from getting stale. So add a little bit of that to the tank, go for a little ride, fill the tank up, and your gasoline will stay in better shape because of it.
Okay, good to know. Should we be replacing our headlights, even if they're not blown out, John?
There is no better, I'm trying to think of a holiday coming up. There is no better St. Patrick's Day gift for anyone than getting new headlights for your car.
Really?
What happens is the useful life of a headlight is about 5 or 6 years. I shouldn't say that. The life of a headlight is about 5 or 6 years. The useful life is probably closer to 2 or 3 years.
Really?
So headlights tend to dim over time. And if it's the same car that you've owned, your eyes don't get any better over time either. In fact, the time between you're 20 years old and 60 years old, you need 3 times as much light to see. Even between the time you're 20 and 40 years old, you need twice as much light to see. So if you're in a car that's now 6 or 7 years old, that still has the original headlights in it, and you're saying to yourself, I just can't see well at night anymore. Well, it's a combination of you and the car. Okay. So replacing your headlight bulbs with new bulbs, they're going to look whiter, they're going to look brighter, they're going to do a better job. And if your car has plastic headlight covers, they can also discolor because of ultraviolet light, and they'll turn yellow, and in some or kind of a white shady color. In some cases, you can polish that out. So you actually buff it down, you take a layer of plastic off, get them nice and clear again. If that doesn't work, replacing the actual headlight assembly with an aftermarket one is cheaper than the factory one. And it'll make them look nice and clear and clean. And it actually really improves the look of the car, too. If you have a car that the headlights look like they're all covered with salt, well, you're not going to get as much light on the road. So getting more light on the road is important. Being able to see better when you're driving, obviously, is important. In fact, when people go car shopping, I always try to, if they can, go road test that car at night. See what you think of the headlights in the car, because you may find, I mean, if you read things like Consumer Reports and the Insurance Institute of Highway Safety, they're looking at headlights a lot more now because some headlight design just isn't as good as others. In fact, we found at AAA that most cars, if you're driving at more than 45 miles an hour, the low beams aren't sufficient enough to light the amount of space in front of your car. So you're actually overdriving your headlights at that point. So don't be shy about putting your high beams on when no one's around. That's what they're designed for, so you can see where you're going. Dim them, of course, when there's oncoming traffic or you pull up behind somebody. But pick a holiday and buy your loved one a set of headlight bulbs.
Interesting. I just learned something. I just thought it was kind of a sales gimmick. You know, you see these ads all the time, upgrade to such and such a brand or.
I mean, you have to be a little bit careful because some places might try to sell you an LED replacement bulb, which is very bright. Most of those are not legal. So you want a bulb that's the equivalent to the bulb you have. Going to a higher performance bulb, there's a couple of makes that they make a brighter, whiter bulb. It's a very well-made bulb, but like all high-performance things, they don't last as long. So just like a high-performance set of tires might only last a couple of years versus 4 or 5 years for a regular set of tires, high-performance bulbs might be about the same. So So you have to be a little bit knowledgeable about what you're buying, but just replacing what you have with what you have can make a big difference in your ability to see. So it does make sense to look at the headlights in your car periodically. We haven't done the study in a while, but if you kind of pay attention, and I'm a little bit geeky this way, if I'm driving around at night, it's probably one out of every five or six cars that seems to have a headlight out or a taillight out. So, you know, once a month or so, turn all the lights on in your car, make sure they're all working, low beams, high beams, license plate light, brake lights, turn signals, make sure they're all working. You'd be surprised how often one of them goes out and you don't notice. I remember working in a garage that every once in a while I'd have somebody come in and say, my headlights don't work at all. Well, what happened was the passenger side light burned out and they didn't notice. And then a month or so later, the driver's side light burns out. Now they don't have any. And they all last about the same amount of time. So if you have a headlight that burns out, replace both of them because the other one's going to burn out right away anyway. So, you know, get it done all at one time.
Yeah, and I'd rather find out before I go in for an inspection sticker, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, that's another thing. You know, the inspection program's been a little bit weird in the last year because of extensions and because of COVID. Keep track of when your sticker is due and, you know, get it done. You can do it early if you want. There's no issue with doing it early. Doing it late, you might get a ticket. So, so if you think you're going away somewhere, maybe, or you just have kind of forgotten about your car, go in and get it inspected. It's the best thing to do. And, you know, that way it'll get checked out. They'll check the steering, the suspension, the lights, horn, wipers, seat belts, make sure everything's working the way it's supposed to.
Sure. All right. Anything else we should touch on, do you think, right now?
I don't think so. I think we've covered an awful lot of information, but I think really when it comes to cars and car maintenance, still the best information really does come from your owner's manual. And it's, you know, maybe where you're not going out as much, as crazy as it sounds, get the owner's manual out of your glove compartment and flip through it and see if there's some maintenance you missed in your car. There could be some things that just you forgot about for whatever reason. Maybe your car's due for a timing belt, or maybe it's due for a cabin air filter, an engine air filter, and you've kind of forgotten about it. Look through the owner's manual, see what some things that maybe you need to take care of that you've just forgotten about. The owner's manual is the best information about your car. And of course, you know, look at those tires, make sure they're in good shape. We have springtime rains coming, and a tire that is maybe not completely worn out, and tires considered worn out when it's down to 2/32 of tread. That's the distance between the edge of a penny and the top of Lincoln's head. We like to tell people replace the tires when they're about twice that thickness. So the edge of a quarter to the top of Washington's head is about 4/32. The difference in stopping on a wet and rainy day with that tire that's at 2/32 and the tire that's at 4/32 from 60 miles an hour can be 60 or 80 feet. Wow. And 60 or 80 feet is the difference between a crash and one that didn't happen. So, right. You know, look your tires over, make sure they're in good shape. Chances are, like you said, Cape cottages are already booked up. Local destinations are going to be busy. You're going to be on the road maybe a little bit more. Make sure your car is not going to disappoint you.
All right. Good advice, John. How do folks reach out to you?
The easiest way to find me, just go to AAA.com/car doctor. There's a little section there that says ask a question, and I will answer every single question anyone asks me with a personal response. So AAA.com/car doctor.
Awesome. Thanks so much, John. Really good to see you.
Thanks, Joe. Take care, and hopefully the next time we can be in person.
I look forward to that day for sure, and I know it will come. So hopefully sooner rather than later.
All right. Take care, Joe. Be safe.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.